this whole thing started last spring. It was the spring semester 2006. I'm teaching a course called Introduction to Technology at Bentley College, which is a business school in Waltham. And in the course that I teach, I should point out that all the students who are in there, we designate that course as a technology-intensive section of IT 101, which is the standard Introduction to Technology course that every freshman has to take. And the section that I teach is for students who claim to have some pre-college background in technology and want a course that's supposed to be more challenging for them and more involved. And so one of the things that we do in the course is have every student buy a pocket PC instead of a textbook as a way to learn and interact with technology. And so when podcasting became like the thing to do in 2006, I decided I had to do it too. Don't keep this next to your computer. Especially if it's on. That wasn't supposed to happen. And so I started podcasting my classes. It seemed that everybody else was podcasting their lectures and getting their name in USA Today. And I didn't want to be left out, so let's see if I can find that link. And so, yeah. So open that one up. Yeah, so we'll see if that comes up. So I was podcasting lectures, and as you heard, I kept a log of who was actually downloading them. I couldn't tell if downloads meant watching, but I could tell if downloads meant downloading them. And my students weren't watching, and so I was trying to figure out why and what we could do about that. At the same time, I tried to figure out how I could use this as a teaching moment to talk about technology in the classroom as a way for students to understand what podcasting is. It turned out that most students had actually heard of the term or seen it because they use iTunes, but they hadn't. A few may have downloaded them. None of them had created them. And so that's what I wanted to see what would happen if we could do that. My other claim to fame with podcasting is as I figured out how to get this working on a Pocket PC, I wrote about it, and it was in Pocket PC magazine over the summer, which was a pretty cool thing about podcasting goes to college and how students can create podcasts on Pocket PCs. We live in a world where technology is personal. Every student has an iPod or a cell phone or something that can receive information from somewhere else. All of my students have Pocket PCs. They're connected to networks all the time. They have more information at their fingertips than ever before. And we need to come up with a way that they can learn with the material that they have in their hands. And that meant learning and creating ways to learn both inside the classroom and outside the classroom. And also figuring out as a teacher, how can I bring all this stuff into the classroom in a way that is reasonably effective and not just say, okay, this is what a podcast is, let's figure out what can I do with it. So that was the challenge for me, was trying to figure out how can I turn this into something more than just download this and listen. And so there's all this stuff, and the question is, how do I teach with all this stuff? And you can't see the word that got linked out there, but we've been playing with blogs for a while. I've been playing with wikis this semester. How many people have used courses with wikis in them? So that's been something new for me this semester, and I'm curious. Let's take a minute. I'm curious what people do with them. And then I'll tell you what I did. Somebody who uses a wiki in class who doesn't have a mouthful of food. I'm curious to see what people have done with wikis.
We used it to have a class sort of taxonomy where students would define terms that were in the readings and then help refine those terms and interlink them.
Cool. Anybody else? So,
for people to list what they're working on and sort of claim different assignments or elaborate.
That's what I found incredibly useful for. I gave an assignment where people had to sign up for groups, and so I just put a page up on a wiki, and they could go in and and sign up with their names on the groups that they wanted to be involved in. And that was much more efficient for me than having them email me their groups and have me post it on the web. The other thing that I did, and I've always wanted to do this, and finally a wiki was a great way to do this, was I love to tell students, if everybody makes up a question for the exam and gives it to each other, then you all have this great study sheet to study from. Mm-hmm. Because clearly everybody can make up one question, but the problem of giving it to each other in some organized way is really impossible. And so what I did was, for the exam that I'm giving next week, I made up a little template with, here are the topics that are going to be on the exam, and each student is required to make one question and post it on the wiki, and then by the time we're done, we'll have 50 questions from which I will choose for the test. And the rule is that you can't repeat a question that another student wrote, and so the people who post early have the greater advantage because there are more openings. because I only allowed a certain number of questions in each category. So that's been
Did you track who posted what question?
Yeah, because if you click on one of the questions, at the end they have to put their name at the end, for two reasons. One is so that if their question is not defined well enough, I can go back and say, you know, this is a good question, but it would be better if, and give them that feedback by email. And since the wiki automatically emails me when somebody updates it, the side effect is I get more email than I ever know what to do with. But I can see what they've posted about it without actually having to go here to look at it. And so this has been working out really well. And students have been able to catch on to wiki markup language, whatever it's relatively simply, without having to know anything about web, making web pages or anything. And it's just been a great way to share and collaborate in that way. So I've been trying that out this semester, and I think it's been working out really well for us. And I hope that I'll be curious to see how other people use these, because becoming it's just a great way to share that kind of information as well and get students involved in the process. And then podcasts. Since I teach a technology class, I wanted to make sure students knew not only what a podcast was from the technology side and some of the social implications as well, but also how to make them and subscribe to them. And one of the side effects for us about that was it brought up this whole conversation about standards and why do I need to create my video in this format but then convert it to that format so it'll play on my iPod, and other things that you can do on the web. The idea of having content come to you is something that's pretty new for people who are used to just surfing the web and going to get it. So it was a chance to introduce a new way for students to actually make use of the web in class and outside of class. Almost every student in college these days has an iPod, it seemed, and Apple's been doing great things with iPod University, making them available. For us, students have iPods, but since my students also had pocket PCs, for which we could use a media player on the pocket PC to display video, since I had been doing audio podcasts at the beginning of the semester, when it was time for them to do podcasts, I wanted to do video, because I figured we'd done enough with audio. Let's see what we can do with video. The hope was that it would give students an opportunity to create a space for learning outside the classroom, and then we would come into class and talk a little bit about what other people had done, and then give an opportunity, again, to take what's going on inside the classroom, outside the classroom, and bring it back again. So that was the hope. And so we talked about in class things that are worth podcasting. The assignment that I gave my students was I put up a syllabus and said, with a partner, pick one day of one of the remaining class sessions, and between you and your partner, you're responsible for creating a podcast of something you learned in class that day and post it before the next class. So it had to be done within 24 to 48 hours. I teach a class that met on Mondays and Wednesdays, so the Monday people had until Wednesday morning to get theirs up, and the Wednesday people were supposed to get up by the end of the week, but usually didn't. The question that I really wanted to figure out was, why is this a useful thing to do, other than the fact that I want them to do it? And I saw that podcasting lectures wasn't working, and I wanted to create a whole activity around this process of creating a podcast of something we did in class. There were things I was worrying about. For people who podcast lectures, will students not show up? Well, we already saw they wouldn't listen again. Video quality is not so great. And searching is really hard, but I'll show you a demo of what we did to get around that. Also, we came up with applications for them to podcast, group lectures, conversations, on the scene reporting. One of the assignments that I gave them last semester was go out and find wireless with your pocket PC someplace, and then when you're there, create an audio file on your pocket PC of where you are and whose audio and whose wireless network you're connecting to, and then and whether or not they know, and then post that up on the web as a podcast as well. So that's what one of the things we did with audio, gave them a chance to do some recording that way. A colleague of mine, Andy Ramsden, in Bristol in England, suggests that podcasting for education is just like planning any other lesson. Make sure you know what you're doing, try it out, do a practice, and make it more conversational, and have a plan for what the what the podcast is gonna look like, and make sure you keep it within your time limit. And of course, listen before you post anything, because once it's out there, you can never take it back. And also, make sure that in the course of a class activity, make sure that there's a context for where the podcast is supposed to apply, and figure out how long it should take students to do it, and make sure they know what the steps are, and come up with ways to measure that. Standard classroom activity steps for most lessons, and also apply to podcasting as well. So the steps that I taught students to do for creating podcasting was make the audio and the video, convert it to the right formats, upload it to the server, and upload the XML. And we used a program last semester called Feed for All, which generated all the appropriate XML, which was a pretty easy thing to do. This semester, I've been playing around with those three guys on the left, Blogger, FeedBurner, and PodZinger, because it hides the process of all of the XML underneath. And so if I can get to my website, let's see. The way I have this set up now, it's relatively easy. I go into Blogger and add the new post in my blog. That gets sent up. FeedBurner is set up to grab the input from the blog and turn it into an RSS feed. And then I have it hooked up with PodZinger, which is a product from BBNN here in Cambridge, that actually converts the audio to text and searches it, so that if you want to go to I hope this works. If you want to go to the lecture where I was talking about computer viruses, you can go over here, and it comes up and it'll tell you everywhere that it thinks I said the word virus.
Nothing that would happen to anybody in this room.
Of course not.
Let's suppose your computer had a virus on it. What? They're familiar with these laptops. What do they do if your computer has a virus on it and they can't get it off through using virus scanning and other methods?
So that's a pretty effective way. Because one of the biggest complaints I had last semester was, I have an hour and a half of audio and I just want to find the part where you talk about this. Well, that's an easy way to do it. It took a bit of finagling to get it set up, but it works pretty well. I learned that PodZinger doesn't have to be 100% accurate. It just has to find the keyword that I keep on saying over and over and over again. Sometimes it does a text-to-speech conversion that's not quite accurate. I remember talking about something about FTP, and I said, when you put a file to the server, and I looked at the transcription, and it said, when there's a pedophile on the server.
Right.
So it wasn't quite accurate, but it was close enough. And what we're going to do later on in the semester is I'll have students subscribe to this particular blog, and then as they post their blogs, their podcasts to the blog here, they can then comment to each other on things that they saw in each other's podcasts. So now there's a way for a two-way channel for communication outside the classroom where they can see a blog and then they can respond to it. There are other websites that allow you to leave audio comments on blogs like Odeo and some others. I haven't played around with those yet in class. But I'm hoping that the two-way channel of communication outside the classroom will really enhance the process. I haven't tried that yet, but that's this semester's activity. Let me show you a couple of demos of some things, and then we'll talk some more. Let's go over here. Okay. So the experiment was, here's a chart. I tracked for the first 8 lectures of my class how many people were downloading them. And you can see it went down immensely from the week that I showed them how to do it until lecture number 8, when I said, here's the review that's of what's going to be on the midterm. And so that's when it was clear that they weren't listening. And so the question was, how long would you listen? And most students said between 6 and 10 minutes. And so out of that came the assignment, okay, with you and a friend, create a 6 to 10 minute podcast of something you learned in class that day. And let me show you a couple of things that students did. If I can...
I'm sorry to interrupt, but they would listen to any podcast or...
No, the one, podcast. Mine, the course podcast. And the idea was...
And so then, that's when I then said, how long would you listen to a podcast related to course material? So clearly an hour and 15 minutes was way too long. So these are done in iTunes. We'll see how this comes up.
Folder. I have an IT folder, and then I made a new one called Week 8 Downloads and saved them all to that. And the
things we download are TCPMP, webcams,
CuckooSaw, FeederReader, and Feed4All. And we'll explain to you what each of those do, too.
The big investment was two webcams that cost $40, and I gave one for each section. They had to pass them off to the next group the next day in class. And this is one of the first ones. It was just a plain videotaped in the dorm explanation front, describing a process. And that wasn't good enough. That was great for the beginning. It was a great start.
You
never know what goes on in their dorms back there.
Nothing fancy to it.
But later on,
the only thing is that there's only three plugins that
stop. Later on, students wanted to figure out how they can show things on the screen in their podcast. And so, that's not the one. Let's try this one.
$7. So you're going to drag that all the way?
So we have things going on like this. Where you point the video camera either at your iPod screen or your computer screen. And
all right,
students quickly realize that.
What we do is we click on advanced and we make sure our settings are correct. Now what we want is that
this was okay, but not quite the best quality.
And this is video format,
even for.
And we want a middle quality.
So that brought up the question: what can we do about this?
Right.
And
now next thing we do, very simply, we click on convert. Now because we're using an evaluation version, we just press continue to evaluate.
So the reason why a lot of these screens say trial version on them is because the video converter that we use is a trial version that watermarks it. And I had a real version if somebody wanted one that didn't have the was trial version across their faces. So they quickly realized that we needed some better way to do video, and so we settled on a program, Camtasia. I told them, well, maybe there's some software that does this, and so without teaching it, they found Camtasia, and so here's one of the first podcasts made with Camtasia, and once the first group of students figure this out, then what's going? Lots of people started using Camtasia.
Is that plan?
And it takes a couple of seconds. And we're done. Do you want to view it? Yes.
We're still
running a test.
Stop. Let's try this one. Play.
Down because it's $7. What month it is. Next, we're going to do the total.
And the reason why the video is choppy is because they recorded it at the right size for a pocket PC screen, not a desktop screen.
For each month.
So they quickly saw that software helps solve a problem,
meals,
which is pretty cool.
You're going to multiply that times the other column of 7.
And do recordings of it. And there's Camtasia is one version of it. That's a product that we downloaded the trial version of. And there's a public domain or open source version called Cam Studio, which does something similar. So they use that to do stuff like this.
And align all the columns going across.
I noticed along the way was that
columns. Yeah, exactly.
As this was happening,
now we're going to merge.
I never taught anybody how to use this software.
Just to make sure,
they seemed to figure it out, and they would discover features of the software, so that by the time later people did their podcasts, they were trying to one up each other, because they were watching and seeing what their friends were doing. And so then later on you get something like this.
To the total. So suppose that we want to have...
They figure out how to do picture-in-picture, and then zoom in so you can actually see the part of the screen that you really cared about.
Go back to the cell and press to the cell and put enter. And this help is really useful if you want to share information within the two sheets. So for example, if you change something in the original, like to 23, then you go back and you see that it's changed a lot.
So.
Okay? And now we're going to show you how to use the...
What I also found was the process of talking about something, you don't know something until you have to teach it. And so the things that I want to talk about after this are some results of some surveys and student opinions about what they thought of this whole process. But the question I want to ask you guys is, what do students learn by doing this? And how else might student-created podcasts add to a class?
So on the second question, we're using a fairly limited set of audio podcasts in a law school class I'm teaching this fall, and the primary purpose of it is to give, essentially to create more class time. And it's a practical focused class, and so the podcasts ask students to put themselves in a simulated practical situation and either give advice to a client or negotiate with an opponent. And so they actually do that in role, and then we can watch it. But it doesn't take up the 10 or 15 minutes of class time that we take. We actually did it in class.
Where do they learn how to create the podcast? Do you show them how to do that, or they go somewhere?
We've given them a very bare-bones tutorial and pointed them to, you know, some of the obvious guides. And we've also made Colin, our podcast guru, available for people. We're less concerned about learning the technology, although it's a nice secondary part of it. So for people who just freak out and don't want to do the technology, they can come and have Colin actually record it. But so far, at least some of the people have been doing it themselves and quite easily. So
yes, they find it's not that hard, and they're impressed with the fact that it actually is relatively easy if you're not worried about super audio quality.
Right.
This is certainly in keeping with modern educational theory of constructivism, where you learn best by making the subject matter your own. And, you know, it's related to that bullet point about active learning, where, you as you're saying, you can't really know something until you actually have to make it your own and then be able to repeat it in your own way.
I think another point, especially when teaching anything about technology, is that doing it this way enables the students to teach the instructor and to teach each other, because one has to assume that you're not going to know everything that some of your students might know, that you know, there's going to be knowledge in the class that in some cases might supplement yours, you know, that you may not be the most knowledgeable person on everything you're teaching, and so doing it this way really enables people to learn from each other and to make sure people aren't feeling frustrated that actually maybe you're missing something that they know more about.
Or what they might not know about. One of the things, right, that I found a couple times, I didn't give any guidelines about what I wanted students to put in their podcasts. It was just 10 minutes of something you learned in class that day. And if there was a couple times, the students clearly didn't get it because what they showed was not quite right. Either there was misinformation, or it wasn't presented clearly, and I would go back and say, or talk about that in class and say, this was a good example, but I just want to make sure that this point that you made is clearer, because it's a way for everybody to show what they know and have an opportunity to find out if, especially since I was doing the same thing in two sections of the same course, if what that told me is if both groups of students independently talked about the same stuff, that meant that they might not have gotten something else that I would need to go back to and spend more time on, or it might mean that that was the easy part of the lecture, not the hard, not the hard part. It was easy for me to tell what they got by seeing what they thought was important. That was the big thing that I got of it. I got to see what my students thought was important. Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
The longest question about wikis, or is that, do you want to stay focused on podcasts?
Let's come back to wikis later. Okay. All right. But hold your question, please. Anybody else for now?
Well, I have a follow-up
question. Okay, please.
Just have there been situations where the students have taught you things you didn't know?
There have been situations where students have come up with examples of things that I would thought were really good that I would later use, and in a course I'm teaching about how to use introductory Excel concepts, for the most part they'll come up with good examples of things. There have been some challenges. One group of kids wanted to do a video, and he said, I have a cell phone that has a movie camera in it, a video camera in it. Can I use that instead of your webcam? I said, sure. And so that was more of a, let's figure out, I have no idea how to get the video off the cell phone and put it in the right format, but I'm sure we can figure out how to do it. So it was, you know, an entire afternoon's gone, but we got, one of the processes for me was to try and come up with a process that would be repeatable for, you know, 50 people. And here all of a sudden these two kids come in and say, we want to use our cell phone. I know how to do that, but, so I think if anything, it showed that I'm not the expert either, and we can learn from each other both on that side as well.
in a course that's more open-ended, I could imagine students using it to talk about things that either I didn't know or wouldn't have thought about, and that happened here too, because they would come up with, a lot of them would come up with examples or find articles that they would talk about in their podcasts based on something that we did in class that I hadn't read.
Is there anybody here who can talk about Charlie Nesson's course and what he's doing with podcasts?
One possibility, I mean, all the students are running their own projects, so one possibility is that the students will do a podcast as their project.
He's also, I'm not very good at this, but very briefly, this course is a podcast, it's Second Life, he's using it as a way of going beyond the MIT open course approach, which everybody likes appropriately, to try to actually make the class sessions accessible to people who are not physically there, which is a very, very different sort of use than what you're doing, which is why I thought maybe somebody would want to talk about it.
Well, I wouldn't mind saying something. I'm actually helping to distribute the course content via audio. I'm working with Dean Jansen, who's the video expert for the class. He's actually taking the course videos, meaning the lecture videos that the Harvard Extension School are shooting for the Harvard Extension students that are also played in Second Life, where they meet to have their class, I believe one or two days after the original class happens here at the law school. But the exciting thing is that Dean and I are trying to find like new ways to distribute these lecture videos to the third audience, which is the at-large group, which is anybody. So it's been really exciting actually to see, because they've been so open and so bold, and to do this, all of the participation of the at-large audience and how much it's generated, you know, it's separate projects that have been inspired by the course and inspired by the openness of the course to, you know, really just open this up to anybody, that then these at-large groups are then forming to, you know, take it in all different kinds of directions. So it's very exciting to sort of watch it develop. Even if you're not even participating in it, you can sort of see this whole collaboration on all these different levels, and all the layers and levels of learning and knowledge and participation on the web is really exciting. So.
Thanks. I found that the consequences of doing this, I'll be curious to see if you had the same experience with your students creating podcasts as well, was that it really changed the way they looked at what was going on in class. The issue of skipping class wasn't one, because they realized that what happens in class was more than they could get out of listening to a recording or watching a 10-minute summary. And if there was a large lecture class where that was, you know, 100% lecture and no, very little interaction, would be one thing. One of the things that we had a hard time doing was, with a little recorder like this, catching student comments on an audio recording is not easy. And it seemed to actually disrupt the classroom when I would then say, oh, and the question was, so that somebody would know what it was later on, because I wouldn't normally teach like that.
So you didn't do that?
When I was podcasting my own lectures using a voice recorder, I found myself having to do that, because I listened to it once or twice and realized that I couldn't hear the question that came from the back of the room. And it just seemed disruptive to have to go back and repeat the question as if I was in a larger lecture, when I'm really in a classroom with 18 people or 20 people.
Well, it's like having a speakerphone.
Yeah.
Where everybody starts speaking to the speakerphone.
Right. And so it didn't seem as natural as this. A few times the recording got in the way. At the same time, from the student's point of view, they thought what they were doing was really cool. Most of them hadn't done this before. It was a way for them to communicate their ideas and figure out what was going on that was important for them to write about or think about. And it really put their work in a different context outside the classroom. They realized that what they were doing was applicable to their lives. They had iPods, and they had other ways to view podcasts, and so here we're actually teaching them something that would hopefully go on and use afterward. As I mentioned before, there's this little sense of competition as students try to one-up each other a little bit, trying to come up with some new cool feature that they might show to make their podcast different from others. People added background music and just lots of different things that made each one different. And the other thing I saw is it gave students an opportunity to be themselves. More, I think that was a big thing that really that I took away from this, is that they were really themselves. They were really, their senses of humor came through, their inquisitiveness came through, their comforting of other students came through. In one podcast that I was watching, the two people who were giving the talk said, well, now we're really not experts on this process, and we don't know it as well as our teacher does, but we can probably explain it to you better in more student language, and we'll try and get you through it.
That's great.
Yeah. And just little things like that really made it so that they really tried to, it really created a community of learning both outside the classroom that really changed what happened inside the classroom as well. They were creative. They learned that there's another way to show what they learned without writing a paper. And the other thing that was big about it was the whole notion of critical thinking.
You showed the numbers before of how many students listen to your podcast. Mm-hmm. How many students listen to each other's?
I'll put that up in a second. thanks for asking. I'll put that up in a sec. And dice it in a couple different ways so you can get a sense of that, both by the topic and by the week. It was interesting to see.
In terms of the actual class participation that you're describing, how would you compare that experience with, you know, the same, on the surface, it sounds the same as, like, if you had people blog, like, people could also write about it in their own voice, but it sounds like there's something that's different in kind than having people do a blog. Well, how would you compare the...
So, first of all, I do have my students blog. Mm-hmm. They use their blogs as a way to do, mostly as a way to do online journals, as opposed to interacting with each other. Although some people interact with each other on blogs, I think that the visual and the audio and the multimedia aspect of it is certainly the thing that differentiates the two. Blogs you have to read, this you can watch it or listen to.
Does that change, like, the tone or what they talk about or how they talk about it? I mean, the medium is obviously one difference, but how does that affect what ends up being the product or the experience?
Well, I think they're more conversational. Again, our purpose in doing it was for them to see how you might actually do this without really worrying about the, quote, polished end product. As you saw, the end product of a lot of these things certainly weren't polished. They were what they were. They were what college freshmen do when you put them in front of a webcam for 20 minutes, and they had fun with it. The other thing I should say about this particular assignment was that it wasn't graded. When I gave it in the middle of the semester, I asked students who would be interested in doing it. I said, I'm not going to grade you on this. I want you to do it for the sake of doing it, and it'll be extra credit, but it's not going to be a graded thing. Primarily because I wasn't sure how I was going to grade these things. I mean, I wasn't sure what the criteria would be. Is it, did you learn a new feature in a program to make your podcast? Did you explain your lesson correctly? There's a whole lot of stuff going on, and I didn't want them to worry about doing something for the sake of getting a good grade on it. I wanted them to do it because it was a fun thing to do that they would learn from, and they could create an opportunity for everybody else to learn with them, and also to see that sometimes you do stuff for that reason and not because you're going to be graded on it. And so it would turn out to be an extra credit project. So everybody got extra credit, which meant that it... I don't know how much extra credit they got, but they got extra credit. What else? The other thing I noticed that for a technology course, this was communication intensive, which is an unusual thing. A lot of people talk about adding technology to liberal arts courses, and this activity really added a liberal arts component to a technology class, because all of a sudden they were engaged in issues of coming up with a script and writing and figuring out how are we going to, more critical thinking exercises of what are we going to put in our podcast and how are we going to make it displayed, and what are some of the problem solving issues that they had to go through in order to figure out some of the technology issues. And so, and also trying to get a sense of what you put out on the web, you know, is out there, and make sure that that's something that they, that the fact that their words are going to have global reach potentially, was something that impacted them a lot. So there's this whole notion of adding a liberal arts component to a technology class that really I hadn't seen happen before that made it more writing intensive than most other courses might be.
You twice referred to the critical thinking side of this, which when people think about podcasts or giving cameras to freshmen is not necessarily the first thing that springs to mind. So I'm really interested. How do you see that this enhanced critical thinking or called upon critical thinking skills?
They have to plan what they're going to do and how they're going to get their message across in 7 minutes. They have to, and whether that means going through a run-through or just making sure that it doesn't drag on for a while. So part of it is that. Part of it is figuring out how are you going to commute, what are you going to say, how are you going to say it, how are you going to use the media that you have effectively, how are you going to get your message across in a screen that's this big. Those are all issues that go beyond getting the material out there. So not only do they have to become masters of the subject that they're talking about, they also have to come up with a way to get that message across in a way that's appropriate for the media that they're sharing it on. And I think that goes beyond writing a paper or making an audio recording. So I think in that sense, it's critical thinking and more analytical that skills that are required to do that. Colin?
Do any of your students find that after they do, especially video, produce a video piece, or that they make any comments or notice, have a different sort of thinking about actually the media, like the larger, you know, like television production, like sort of the fact that they're actually becoming producers? Have any of them said either that they have a new appreciation for what goes into it, or wow, I never thought that I could, you know, did they make any comments about looking at the culture of the media differently?
There was a lot of, wow, I didn't know I could do that. There was a lot of that. I think they gained an appreciation for what it takes to see any video that's up on the web. We would talk about other sites like YouTube and Google Video and some of the issues related to that. And I think it was also a sense of empowerment that if I really wanted to, I could put my video up there too. We also did a video unit with Photo Story, which is a Microsoft product, it's a free download, and you can add still images and add pans and zooms and audio and stuff to create a movie. And the assignment they gave them was to create a 60-second commercial for a product. And I think it was empowering for them to see that they could actually build something like that and make it look really close to what you might see in a more professionally done project. They get a sense of what the power of software is to solve these kinds of problems, and that there are new ways to communicate that go beyond the printed word. They also get a sense of, yeah, that it takes a lot to pull this sort of stuff off.
Did you get the feeling, I mean, you know, some of us who sort of do things related to journalism and media, you know, have become concerned a lot with media literacy and just the extent to which people are or are not being encouraged, even younger in high school, to create content and media, and that in some high school districts people are being discouraged from doing so actively. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about, you know, to what extent this should be done quite a bit younger as an educational tool.
I don't know quite about younger, but what I would rather see, or what I would like to see, is I think it would be great if all freshmen, for example, learn how to do this, mm-hmm. learn how to create videos and audio and do podcasting, things like this, so that then in courses later on in college, it could be a given. This is another way that we can communicate with each other, so that when they take their government class, or a business class, or a business law class, or whatever course that they're taking, it's just a given that they have these skills, so they can use them
in those courses as well, and it would really bubble up across the university. I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon, but it's. But it seems that, again, where I'm coming from, is I'm coming from teaching first semester freshmen. That's when you get them, and so that's about as young as we get them in college. And so, to teach them there a skill that they can use across the board is a good thing.
And going in the other direction, what do you see as a possibility of extending towards older folks, people who are working professionals, in terms of what you learn from this and whether it would be possible for this to happen in a professional education setting or in a continuing education setting, where you may not even be part of a formal course, it might just be part of your general knowledge management for your organization or your community.
Where, and the process isn't hard, and I think, so teaching and teaching the process isn't hard. You can do that in a day, or as you do, send somebody off to a lab to take a one-hour training on how to create a podcast. The bigger issue is, for me, is coming up with how you plan it and what do you do to get your message across effectively. And those are skills that, sure, belong not only to college freshmen, but people in the workforce as well. So, yeah, the training is the same. The way people actually use the product is what would make it, and the technology to get their message across is, I think, what would shift between whether it's in a classroom or in a professional setting.
It looked like most of the media they were creating was like related to the class, and the audience was the class itself. Do you have them creating content for like general people outside of the class or the general public, that sort of thing? And then sort of the other question is, and maybe it's out of scope for a technical class, of what else goes in beyond creating the media and putting on the internet a promotion and, you know, talking, getting feedback from your audience and sort of having that larger like context.
In this particular class, and because I wanted to really do a study of how the downloads or how the students were interacting with the podcasts as a learning tool, we intentionally did not register the URLs or publicize the feed, because I wanted to know that when I saw 80 downloads, I wanted to know that there was most likely my students who were doing those 80 downloads. So in this particular case, we did not do content with the intent of making it available to everybody. Some students may have given the links to their videos to their friends or family to see, but that was beyond the intent of this particular study. We did talk about how other people would make their podcasts available, and because one of the things that we did before they were creating podcasts was I had them go to various sites and just to get a sense of the vastness of what's out there, you know, download and listen to some. And so then that opened up a conversation about some of the things that you brought up, which were, how do these people, you know, get their stuff out there, and how can you find out about it, and things like that. But that was more tangential to what we were doing, and they knew that the primary audience for what we were doing were themselves and their classmates. Again, only because I was really trying to get a sense of the effectiveness of having students create podcasts for each other on their learning.
I'm curious about the collaboration aspect. What benefits did you see in having two people work together as a team creating it rather than just having people do this individually?
So having two people do it was partially a practical decision. I started in the middle of the semester and there were only, you know, 25 people in the class and 12 sessions left. It worked out nicely to have two people work on it at the same time. I think that we talked about how podcasts are often good if they're conversational. And so having someone talk with and present your stuff with really helped with that. Also, they seem to use each other as learning partners, especially with, invariably one of them would be better at technology than the other, and one might be better at the content than the other. And so it's not like they had figured it all out by themselves. They could turn to a friend to get the help that they needed. I think that was a big thing. I also didn't really care who they worked with, and I also felt that since it was an assignment that wasn't being graded, if they could work on it with somebody who they knew and who they liked, then it would be a fun thing as opposed to an individual homework assignment if they had to do it by themselves. So that was the rationale for having them do it with a partner.
Okay.
And I also think that as a matter of learning and having somebody to talk about your ideas with really helped polish their conversations a bit. Let me show you a couple of the stats to answer your question, then we'll come back to your question about wikis. So here's some statistics. These are downloads by the day from the middle of March till the end of the semester in May. And this is just of any podcast in the series. So the beginning of the semester, there were a lot because I showed them how to do it. But the middle week of April, there was a lot that week also because there was a midterm and I put up a review podcast of stuff and told people to download that. And then coming toward the end of the semester again, the week of the semester, there were a lot more downloads because of the final exam. They asked me to put up a review sheet for the final, and I put up a review podcast instead, where I had 5 questions and 10 seconds of Jeopardy music, and then I answered the questions, and then kept on doing that. Actually, one of the questions that I put up on the final exam was, because I wanted to see who actually listened to the review podcast, was, what was the music that I played in between the questions on the on the review podcast? Because I figured that's something they would, if they listened to it, they'd know. Except for this one student who was from another country, and she said, I don't know the name of it, but I can sing it for you. Downloads by topic were pretty consistent. Between sections, the red and the purple indicate 2 sections, and they were the same topics. And in a class of 25 students, to get more than half the students downloading most of them was pretty good. As I went along, I could see that. And then downloads by the hour was an interesting thing. This was any time over the course of the semester, since I looked at the time that anybody was downloading anything. And 2 in the morning was pretty popular. So was 2 in the afternoon. That's where the 14 is, 2 in the afternoon. And I think that's because the morning class got out around 1 o'clock, or around 1:45. And so they would download stuff after class, between 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock. And then the afternoon class got out at 5 o'clock, and so people download stuff right after that class, too. That's the only thing I can suggest as to why those were higher than other times. And the 2 o'clock in the morning thing, I have no idea what students are doing at 2 o'clock in the morning. Some interesting things about how they first learned about podcasting. Most of them learned about it in class. A few of them read articles about it or heard about it from other places, but most of them had learned about it in our class. That was kind of cool. Most students listened to parts of the podcast to clarify information or to see if they missed things. About a quarter of them listened and took notes from them. Some of them listened to things many times. I don't know why. Some people only listen if they miss class, and a lot of people would get together and apparently have podcast parties and listen with their friends.
Any excuse for a change.
So that was kind of cool. And it really seemed that their learning was enhanced by the process. A couple things students said. The whole idea of applying podcasting is something I couldn't have foreseen myself using. It's one thing to record yourself, but it's another to publicly broadcast your voice. I could understand certain professions using this, so thinking ahead toward using this when they get out of the real world, out into the real world. It seems that podcasting is becoming big. I had no idea that this existed until I took the class. This stuff is useful. It's something that I've been doing ever since I learned how in class. I made a couple of video podcasts about college life, and all my friends were blown away that I actually knew how to do this stuff. And then one person's last remark sort of put the whole thing in perspective. It's good that the world can see and appreciate the impact of what we're doing. When they realize that they could give somebody their URL and all of a sudden people could see their role as their video out or their voice out there as a learning and a teaching thing. So that's some of the stuff that we did, and it was pretty cool. Other comments about podcasting, then we'll come back and talk about wikis.
One last thing. What have you learned in terms of what will you do differently with the assignments, the technology, however you do this the next time around?
So the next time is this semester, and I'm definitely going to use, as I started doing with FeedBurner and Podzinger, because I think it makes the process of uploading much easier. The downside is, because I teach a technology course, it hides the underlying XML, which I want students to learn about. But we ran into some snags where students would upload feeds
and overwrite what everybody else did in the feed file with theirs, instead of downloading the existing feed, adding theirs to it, and putting the whole thing back. So this should avoid that. I'm hoping, I really want to get people to comment on each other's podcasts to create it, to help create a two-way discussion outside the classroom. And I'm hoping that the blog, using Blogger to do that will help that process a lot, because I'll actually require, just like I require people to sign up for specific dates to do a podcast for that class, I'll also require people over the course of the semester to comment on three of their fellow classmates' podcasts on the blog. And whether it's randomly or on assigned dates, yeah, I don't know yet. I'll probably just make it do it when you want, so I don't have to keep track of it. So those are some things I would do differently. I think definitely going with video was the way to go, especially since it lends itself, number one, to doing a lot of the stuff that we're doing is screencasting because of the nature of the kind of stuff that we're doing. And so I'll definitely do that again. I would not, and the only other thing I would do differently, I think, is try and stay tighter to the amount of time that students have to actually do these things. The goal was, if you're in the Monday class, get it up by Wednesday, and sometimes it dragged a little bit, and that made it hard to then go back in class and say, to talk about them in class, because the assumption was that it's up the next day, and then you have your aggregator set to download the stuff, so you watch it before you get to class, so that everybody sees it. And some people did. And again, I would tell them to watch specific ones, or I would put questions about things that people said or did in their podcasts that if they watched, they would remember, such as my Jeopardy music question, just to see who's actually watching them on tests and stuff. So I would definitely do that again. Wikis.
It's a very vague question. So podcasts, you have two people working on it together, and you can, if you wanted to, you could grade them on it.
Mm-hmm.
I understand you didn't, but
I could.
You could. We know how to do that. If you have students using a wiki in order to, not simply to coordinate activities, but to actually try to build a site that it's a class paper, is I guess what I'm trying to say. How would you, A, is that appealing? B, how would you grade them on it? And C, does the fact that it would be really hard to grade them on it make it less appealing?
If they're building a class paper that everybody was editing the same thing?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm going to make this up. Let's say the assignment is, here's a wiki site, and by the end of the term or in the next 3 weeks, I want to have, I'm making it up, or a Wikipedia of about the topic of the class or something more defined. Mm-hmm. Or I want a site that would be a good introduction to next year's students who are taking this class.
I'll have to try that.
Oh,
okay. I don't know. The closest I've done is the thing where I showed you where they're posting exam questions so that everybody else can benefit from that.
That's pretty nice.
And from that, if I wanted, I could grade them on the quality of their individual questions because I had them put their names up on there. One of the things that the wikis do is they'll log all the changes that are made to them. So if I really wanted to, I could go back and if I required them to log in, I could go back through the logs and see who wrote what or who wrote which pieces. But I don't know how I would grade that. I really don't. Just because you wrote these three sentences, is that any better or worse than somebody else's three sentences? And how do they contribute to the paper? I don't know. I like the idea, and it's one I hadn't thought about, of saying we're going to write a collective class paper. And I think that with 25 people in a class, it might be too unwieldy. But I could see coming up with six topics and having groups of four write a collective website using a wiki, because then it becomes much easier to manage the grading among four people than 20 people. And I hadn't thought about that, but you've given me a good idea to figure out how to try that, to come up with six topics and say, you four come together, do this. The hard part is measuring, as in any group project, you know, the one person who does 90% of it and the other two people who
put their names at the bottom. And one of the things that I do, I just gave a group project this semester, this past week, where students had to do a presentation on something in a group. And what I did was at the beginning of their presentations, I had them rank the participation of each member of their group independently. So they had to basically make a pie chart and put in the how much they think they and their partners participated. And if everybody says the same thing, then they're either all working equally or they're all lying, one of the two. But and if one person says, you know, I did 90% and they did 5%, then that would definitely impact how I graded them, especially if everybody was honest about that.
How are you using, like, reusing the content? You have, what, 200 podcasts now, and you're teaching this class again. Are you making former semesters, like, content available and using it in current classes? Or how are you dealing with the fact that, you know, you have this massive accumulation of content now that's sort of...
That's just sitting there?
Yeah.
So, first of all, I don't have 200 podcasts now. I have, like, 20. But, I'm really torn because I thought about, do I want to make last semester's podcast available for this year's people? And I really don't, because I want these students to go through the same moments of discovery that the students had last year. And if they see what the other people did, then it could influence how they figure things out themselves. And so I'd rather perhaps make them available afterward or in a different context, but not, or as supplementary material where I might post links to these videos on the web. But I really don't want them watching that, because I want them to go through the same process of discovery. The only difference this semester is that last semester was when I did it the first time, it was discovery for me too. And I was blown away by some of the things that they did. And now I have a sense of what's possible. And so I can push to reach at least that, if not further. But it's a tough choice, because you're right, there's a lot of good stuff that other people could benefit from. I may make it available to other sections of the course that I'm not teaching. If you want to learn how to make a pie chart in Excel, watch this video, that kind of thing. But I really don't want my students to intentionally see what the other people have done, because it'll influence their own process. I want them to discover, part of this is about learning and discovering, I want them to discover that when you point your webcam at the computer screen, you get really crappy video, as opposed to me saying, oh, go download this program, because it'll solve that for you. Anybody else? Should we stop?
Any other questions? All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you all.